Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. I am John Schmelk. He is called Paul Dottino. And the Giants, or rather the NFL, is getting ready for the Super Bowl. It is just five days away in Minneapolis. They had media day last night, which I know was Paul's favorite event of the year. All the very serious football questions. People really getting into the X's and O's with these guys at the podium. If you love football and really talking about stuff on the field, Media Day is for you.
John, you're going to laugh. I actually watched some of it last night on NFL Network.
I did not. I must admit, I did not turn it on.
I watched some of it, and the best part of the almost hour, 45 minutes to an hour that I watched, basically because there was nothing else on, they challenged Willie McGinnis to make Bill Belichick laugh more than six times during his interview.
Wow, six is a high number.
Apparently, he did six last year.
Okay.
So they told him, you have to beat it. So McGinnis tells him flat out, he goes, Coach, I need you to laugh more than six times. Come on, you got to help me out now, Coach. Come on.
Well, you can't tell him.
Well, of course you can't, but that's why Willie McGinnis isn't a professional announcer. Mm-hmm. So he tells him, and then they start, and I think the final count on Belichick was like 10.
Did he get any, like, genuine laughs?
Yeah, actually there were. There were some.
Such as?
And,
give me a couple questions.
He asked, well, one of the things he asked him about was I'm drawing a blank. One of the questions he asked him was about all the controversy. And he asked him about, you know, putting all that stuff aside and everything. And Belichick just, like, gave him a smirk. And I was like, ding! So they put a little picture of Belichick on the side of the screen, lower left-hand corner. And it was a graphic. And every time Belichick would smirk or smile, they would make the graphic into a smiling Belichick and then hit a little bell and put a number up to count it. It was just goofy. That's all. It was just goofy. I don't remember all the particulars about it, but it was the most enjoyable thing of this insanity that is now Super Bowl Media Day.
Now, the last Media Day you were at was the one here in New York, right?
Yeah, I did the Seattle-Denver
yes.
one when they played at the Meadowlands.
What was your favorite moment of that?
Wow, my favorite moment for that one had to be the confrontation that I got into with Beast Mode.
You got into a confrontation with him?
Oh, yeah. It's probably still on YouTube.
Oh, what happened? Talk to me. I didn't know about this.
How do you not know about this?
I don't remember. Maybe I did. I forgot.
It made the national TV and everything. It was all over the place.
Well, maybe I knew it happened. Maybe I didn't know you were the one on the other end
of it. There you go. Well, because I didn't come out bruised.
Well, so what happened?
Beast Mode, as you recall, did not come to the initial media day at the Prudential Center in Newark.
Yes.
He just snuck into the back hallway, like came out for 30 seconds or whatever and ran away.
Yeah, he came out behind one of those, like, the red ropes, right?
And only talked to, like, Deion Sanders.
Correct.
So he could avoid the fine.
Yeah, because he's a jerk.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So the next day, he was supposed to talk at the team hotel in Jersey City, where the Seahawks were staying, downstairs in the ballroom. So he was there with Michael Robinson. They were at a table together, they were going to be. And Robinson was hanging out there. And Beast Mode was supposed to sit next to Robinson. And, of course, the flood of people around his table was just unbelievable. It was like they were giving away money.
Well, of course.
Because everybody wanted to be there. So, anyway, Beast Mode sits down, and he's not talking. Of course, he's not doing it. He's just sitting there, and he goes, I'm just here to avoid the fine. I'm just here to avoid. And that's all he keeps saying. So, finally, I challenged him. And I said, don't you think that you have a responsibility based on the money that you make for the National Football League, that you have to talk to the fans and you have to let them know? And he got bristly with me, and he looked up and he goes, no, the fans know how I – and he starts talking. So I got him to talk, which was so cool. And the confrontation's on YouTube, and it went back and forth for like three questions or so. And finally Michael Robinson kind of intervened to calm him down because he was getting a little edgy with me. And yes, for real. And so,
nice.
and it made it to like all the TV stations, the national media and everything. I don't know that anybody ever knew it was me because, you know, I was out of the screen.
Right.
But
I'm surprised that didn't get brought up on FAN more because you were covering it for FAN.
I was.
Interesting.
CBS Sports Network made a big deal out of it.
Nice.
Anyway,
All right. Well, there we go.
My 15 seconds of fame with the Beast Mode.
Anyway, we should point out that James Betcher was obviously announced as the Giants' defensive coordinator by Pat Shurmur last Friday.
Yes.
I know a lot of other names have kind of trickled out here over the last few days. Nothing is official on those guys yet, but if you want to call and ask us about them, we could talk about them, but just want to stress that nothing is official, and the Giants have not made any official hires or anything like that. So just want to make that very clear. But again, we're happy to take your calls about it. We are going to have a guest at 12:40, John Ledyard from NDT Scouting. I saw him out at the Senior Bowl. He was out there. He also has an interesting take on Saquon Barkley. I know a lot of you guys are Barkley fans. We'll talk to him about that as well. So we'll talk to him around 12:40. Until then, since we're getting a guest at the end of the show, I want to get to your calls as early as possible. Paul will be on tomorrow with Lance, so he will get his final take on the Super Bowl, and we'll get your prediction then.
Okay.
And then I'll be on Friday, unless you want to give me a quick Super Bowl prediction now.
It's hard to pick against the Patriots. Let's not kid ourselves.
I agree. I do think there's a path, though.
Oh, I agree.
For the Eagles.
The Eagles absolutely have a chance.
And it's because of their front on defense. That's their path. That's their only path.
That's how the Giants beat Brady twice.
Well, and that's how the Eagles did a good job last week disrupting the Vikings.
Absolutely so agree, John.
That's their path. Can the offense do enough to make that path viable? We'll see. I have a bad feeling that Doug Peterson threw his big shock and awe game plan out there last week by having Foles chuck it down the field when no one expected him to.
Right.
Does he have another surprise up his sleeve? If he does, God bless him. I'm not sure what it could possibly be. But we'll see. I do think there's a path. We'll see if the Eagles offense can do enough. Because let's be honest, the Patriots defense is not great. It's fine. But you can move the ball on them.
They give up yards, not points.
Yes, you can move the ball on them. So I think Elliott, the kicker for the Eagles, is actually going to be a really important part of this game.
Man, he hits another 61-yarder. Watch out.
All right, let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. So Paul's going Patriots. I'll give you my prediction on Friday. Let's go to Christian in New York. He will lead us off on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. Well, first of all, Paul, thank you for saying what you said to Beast Mode, because that's such a solid point. I've talked about that a lot, too. And
yeah. He didn't like me very much.
I have a question for both of you. Paul, why do you think the run defense slipped in such a way this year?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't like to use injuries as an excuse, but as Dan Reeves always said, they can be a reason. John, we talked to Steve Spagnuolo about it during the end of the season, and he said, look, I've had five different middle linebackers play this year. That's a big deal. You have to start there. Now, beyond that, look, the rest of the linebacking core was certainly not stellar. They did not play nearly as well as they did the year before. We know that. Landon Collins had a bit of a rocky first half of the season before he got himself back on track. Let's not kid ourselves. He's a big part of the rush defense.
And Darian Thompson didn't tackle well in run support either.
And don't forget, Olivier Vernon was banged up again. Bad sprained ankle that really hampered him for a lot of games, John. He's a big run stopper.
And I'm not going to, Christian, say why they played poorly. You could say injuries if you want. I'm not inside these guys' bodies. I don't know.
No, it's hard to say.
I thought the rush defense by both defensive ends this year took a severe drop off from what we saw in 2016.
Vernon more of a drop than JPP, I thought.
I thought JPP was poor run defense this year. I really do. People ran stretch plays off that side a lot earlier in the year. They did the same to Vernon's side. They caught him on a lot of those plays. Outside the tackles, and I put that on the defensive ends a little bit.
Yeah.
I think teams had a lot of success running outside. Maybe it was because of injuries, but I don't think Vernon or Jason Pierre-Paul were nearly as good against the run as they were in 2016.
You know what? Bottom line, a bunch of reasons. There's not just one.
Correct.
And that's part of my question for John.
Yes.
What do you think? Now, let's just say that this is assuming that the Giants want to get a quarterback with the number two pick. What kind of draft pick do you think you could get, or basically package deal you could get, if you traded Davis Webb and Pierre-Paul together for someone?
I don't think you're getting much. Not right now.
Maybe like a second-round pick?
JPP? No way. JPP has a bajillion dollars left on his contract. He's coming off of an off year where he, again, was banged up a lot of the year with shoulder issues. Nobody knows what Davis Webb is because he hasn't played in a game yet. You would have to, A, if you trade JPP, the other team is to take on his base salary, which is sizable. But more importantly, the Giants would have to eat his prorated signing bonus, which is almost it's probably $15 million or so of dead money on the cap. So, Christian, that is not going to happen.
Actually, if they were to trade him, it'd be $22.7 million.
That have to go on the cap.
Not a good idea. Not a good idea.
It was actually more than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's not going
to
happen.
And again, that's not official, by the way. That's according to
overthecap.com.
So right. I'm not sure if their numbers are exactly right, but that's what's there. And remember, his base salary, another team would have to be able to absorb, it looks like
it's
around
11.2 is his base.
Yeah, but I think the 7 takes out the prorated bonus.
Yeah,
I'm not sure
guaranteed
how that
works. Is 7.75.
So again, I don't think a trade of Jason Pierre-Paul and getting anything of value back is really very realistic right now.
And to be honest with you, if the Giants believe that these guys can be healthy this year, there's no reason why they can't assume that they will play like they did in 16. When, to be honest with you, they were one of the more formidable duo defensive ends in the league.
Especially defending the run.
Yes.
Well, if they like to basically have outside linebackers be rushers, then I'd like to see Vernon Pierre-Paul do that and maybe draft another DN that can handle setting the edge.
Well, make no mistake about it. Those two guys, even though they've been injured, have been beaten up and worn down because they've played too many snaps. The Giants really wanted a third guy to come to the forefront. Romeo Okwara didn't have a chance to do it. He was injured last year. And Avery Moss was just a young kid. He was as green as a head of lettuce. And so you couldn't ask him to really do very much. Are one of those guys able to step up, or the Giants have to maybe draft somebody? And I wouldn't be beyond doing that, John.
And not to mention the fact, what's the front going to look like under James Betcher? Is it going to be a 3-4? And if it's a 3-4, and to me, the 3-4 transition, if it happens, Christian, is feasible. You put Harrison in nose tackle. He played that spot with the Jets. He'll be fine. Mm-hmm. You put Tomlinson in one of the DN spots. He'll be great stopping the run there. That's what you're looking for. The question to me, and you put OV as a stand-up rusher. He did that in Miami. He'd be
absolutely
fine. Where do you play Jason Pierre-Paul? Does he have it at this later stage of his career to play that dirty position as a hand-in-the-dirt 3-4 defensive end? And does he have the athleticism at this age to be that 3-4 stand-up guy, or do you use him in both spots depending on the down and distance? I think if you go to a 3-4, how you use JPP is probably, to me, the most interesting decision the defensive coaching staff would have to make, because I could honestly see it working both ways.
I'll say this. Avery Moss may benefit from this scheme.
Going as a stand-up rusher, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He might really benefit from this.
I agree.
But do 3-4 DNs have even more run responsibility than a 4-3 DN? Because
yes.
If that's the case, I don't see Pierre-Paul being able to do that. Because this year, I mean, I guess, you know, he's going to be constantly banged up because of the way his hand is now.
Yeah.
And so I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, up to full speed again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with his hand, to be honest with you. I don't. I think, he always has those shoulder issues, periodically throughout mm-hmm. the year. You see him go down, it looks like he kind of has a stinger. It's a good question, and I think how they use him will be the most interesting decision that they have to make. And you're right, maybe you use him in a more specialty role, because as Paul said, you want to try to reduce him and Vernon's snaps. So maybe that's how you limit where he plays and when he plays. I think there'll be some interesting choices.
You know, I do want to remind you, JPP, according to the NFL's official stats, was credited with 68 tackles last year, which was second among defensive ends to Joey Bosa in the NFL. So, I mean, I agree with John. He wasn't as good against the run as he was in 2016. I still think that Vernon had a much more difficult time last year. He was also more banged up with the sprained ankle.
I think there was more of a drop-off from Vernon from 16 to 17, because I think Vernon was just ridiculous at stopping the run.
He was insane in 16.
In 16, I don't think JPP had as big of a drop-off per se. But I think in terms of their overall effectiveness from both of them, I would put them
all
on a very similar plane for this season.
Both of them need to get better.
Correct.
I agree.
Yes, I'm with you on that. I think we're in agreement.
But I got a feeling that Jason can actually handle the role. I think he'll be okay in that situation. For me, it's more about getting them relief of snaps, Because if they don't have a guy, and maybe Aquara is that guy, maybe he's not. Maybe Moss is the guy who can relieve Vernon. Maybe Aquara is the guy who can relieve JPP. I don't know.
And by the way, you listed the tackles. JPP played more snaps than any 4-3 defensive end in the league. 1,010. The next highest was Cameron Jordan at 987. And scanning through the numbers here, Paul, no one else even had 900.
And that's,
so that's a lot.
And that's
of
what
snaps.
I'm trying to tell you, man. Correct. You got to keep changing the oil every once in a while. And this poor guy was on the field, or if you will, on the racetrack, without making any pit stops.
And as far as my Davis Webb mention, do you think that you could have a healthy situation having Eli, a number two pick in the draft, being a quarterback, and Davis Webb all on the same roster?
Yeah, I do. I don't see why you can't have two young guys competing behind Eli. Look, Eli's been around a long time. You're going to have to give him a good number of snaps because it's going to be a relatively new offense here with Pat Shurmur. But I think there's no reason you can't have two young guys developing behind him. And you would hope in his second year, Davis Webb has done enough where he can be the backup quarterback.
See, I think he's right. It can happen. I would strongly advise against it, because if Dave Gettleman's mission from John Mara is to make us good this year, he said we expect to be a good team this year, well, then to have two young guys behind Eli doesn't help you. Because if Eli goes down, then you're not going to win anything, in all likelihood.
Well, I think either way in that argument, but the way you love Davis Webb, you got to think he's ready to be a backup quarterback, right?
I think.
I mean, come on, you want to be the future starter. He's got to be ready to back up.
I get that, but as far as I'm concerned, his timetable for me has always been 19 or 20. It's never been 2018.
Yeah, but I don't want him to be a starter in 18. I want him to be a backup at 18.
Right, but what I'm saying is, because you think you're going to be a potential playoff team this year, and they thought that in 17, that's why they signed Geno Smith, because in the usual MO. If you think that you've got a chance to do something now, you want one of your backups, if you're going to keep three, to be a veteran.
Well, here's
and
the
that's football 101.
I hear you, and I understand that. It makes sense. But look, if you have a guy that you like as a third-round pick in his second year, he should be ready to be your backup quarterback, especially if you think he's going to become something in year number two. And then you also have the second overall pick in the draft. He better be able to damn well be a backup quarterback, too.
Well, exactly.
If you're picking him at number two,
exactly.
He better be ready to be a backup.
This is all
come on.
You're helping to fuel my argument why there's no way I'm taking a quarterback at number two. Just not happening. But anyway, that's another story.
Thank you, Christian. Appreciate the call. 201-939-4543. If you're picking a quarterback at two, he better be ready to be your backup quarterback, okay? If he's not, then you probably maybe shouldn't pick him at number two. Let me just put it that way.
I'm not taking him.
Well, that's fine.
Okay.
Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. He's up next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, great to talk to you guys. I love the show and listen to you guys talk to you guys. I know you ain't making your picks, but do you have somebody would you announce that you'd like to see win this Super Bowl here?
You know, it's funny, and I had this argument at lunch the other day, and I kind of said that, quite frankly, I don't really have much of a rooting interest, and somebody here was like, how could you not root against the Eagles? We hate the Eagles. Da, da, da,
yeah.
Da, da, da. Well, here's the thing, and honestly, here's the way I look at it. I don't dislike any players on the Eagles. It's not like there's DeSean Jackson running around doing stuff, and it drives me nuts to see that guy win a Super Bowl. Like, who on the Eagles do I really despise right now? There really isn't anyone that you hate. And usually in these games, I like to root for the underdog in games where I don't have a rooting interest.
Yeah.
So I don't have the type of animus right now for this particular Eagles team than maybe I have for Eagles teams in the past. That's why I don't – I mean, I want to enjoy a good game, and – usually in situations like these, my emotions during the game will tell me who I'm actually rooting for. Because right now, I'm honestly not sure. But generally, I like to go for the underdogs in games like this.
And I understand that, John. I'm going to tell you, simply put, being that I knew Belichick when he was here, I know it sounds crazy to people. How could you possibly want the Patriots to win? I think everyone outside of New England is rooting against them. But I will tell you, Bill Belichick, to me, is still a Giant at heart.
And that's fair, too.
And so
absolutely.
I still have tremendous respect for him. Got along with him great when he was a Giants defensive coordinator. And I just have a soft spot. I cannot dislike Belichick. I can maybe dislike – some of the Patriots or their players or their logo or their franchise.
Or their way, the way they've gone about
right.
things in the past.
But I can't dislike Bill Belichick
and,
himself.
And that's fine. I get that.
So,
Well, it's different for me. You are going by the team and the players. To me, it's the fans. I'm in here, might as well say, the heart of PA, you know, big Eagle country. And, you know, half of my family is diehard Eagles, where I'm a diehard Giant fan, you know what I mean? And it's just putting up with their fans. But another thing I always
and that's
like
fair
is
too.
That.
That is absolutely fair. That is absolutely fair.
Yes, it is.
I like about that is that if the New England wins again, you know, they're going to the Hall of Fame, Belichick and Brady.
Well,
and
they're going anyway.
Eli can always smile down on him and Coughlin, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, you know that, Joe, that is true. And some Giant fans also brought that up to me. They want to be able to say two things. One,
right.
that the Eagles still have never won a Super Bowl. And they like to hold that over the heads of Eagles fans. Then number two, as Joe pointed out, I think it's a good point too, Joe, that you want to be able to say, well, the only team to knock out Brady and Belichick in the Super Bowl were the Giants. And Giant fans like to kind of hold on to that. And I understand that too. That makes
That's
sense.
Fine.
I buy that.
That's fine.
Yeah. Well,
I don't care.
Going on what you mentioned there earlier with Pierre Paul, there, does he have to wear that? Early in the season, he said he could go to that smaller glove. You said it was a shoulder injury, but then why did he have the big mitten on again?
Well, he did have shoulder issues throughout the year, but then late in the year, he broke a bone in his finger? One of his fingers on that hand?
Somewhere
and that's why
in the hand.
And that's why he had to wear the glove, because of a broken hand.
Well, what I want to say was Paul's right. Like I said, you can't have them guys playing 80-90% of the snaps.
Yeah,
the
I
Eagle
agree.
Defensive line just said, like Fletcher Cox and him said that, you know, they're rotating them. You check and see the snaps that they played that the Eagles line. They said they feel good because they were rotated in and out. You know what I mean? Probably paying 50-60%. You know, the most. Mm-hmm. And they key that as a big thing, you know, especially with all this passing going on two-thirds of the time, you know.
You know, Joe, so, I would maintain to you that as great as Michael Strahan was and O.C. Manure and Justin Tuck, the fact that they had that rotation going and each guy was playing between 40 and 45 snaps maximized their impact on the games.
Right, and we had more of a ball control offense at them
sure.
times too.
Sure,
you know what I mean.
They didn't have to be on the field
difference.
As much,
and that's where I like to see the turnaround with us ball control and get and giving these guys a break, which makes a big difference. I said you look on all that with the Eagles and that time of possession and rotating their lines. That's a big thing there. So, but what I want to say here now, we're talking about the coaches here and. I think a big thing is going to be who our offense and defensive line coaches. None of that they were brought up yet, were they?
No, I haven't seen many of those names out there. The one name that's been bandied about for defensive line is Gary Emanuel, but again, none of that is official.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering a lot of these guys here, because I did see all the other just about – all the other ones, predictions in that the offensive coordinator and a lot of these players, coaches might be coming from the Eagles. I even heard Deuce Daly possibly as an offensive coordinator, and that would be a blow to the Eagles too in a way that, you know, he's been snubbed. He's been their running backs coach for quite a while, and so I don't know on that, you know, but I'm just thinking, are these coaches going to be coming from the Eagles a lot, and possibly because Sherman was there, and is there somebody from New England? I have no idea there. And one other thing I want to bring up there, we're talking about the draft, and how important, I was just wondering if it is, if we don't take this quarterback, which I don't, I believe, you know what I mean, they really have to look at it hard. The draft, how high would you draft that? And would he be the number one lineman, the guard from Notre Dame to take?
I believe he will probably be the first lineman off the board, but I don't say that with a ton of confidence. I think Connor Williams from Texas, the tackle, could also be the first lineman off the board. In my opinion, those are the two top 10 worthy offensive linemen as of now that are in this draft. So if the Giants, as Paul advocates for, do end up trading down, but they still end up in the top eight, and I probably, frankly, wouldn't want to go out of the top eight if I do trade down, in my opinion, I would have no problem drafting Quentin Nelson out of Notre Dame, even though he's a guard. I think he's going to be that good of a football player.
Yeah, I believe so, too, there. But how high? The tackles normally will go up in the top five. Will guards or centers go up in the top five? I don't think so, do they?
No. Usually,
tackles are more
usually,
of a premium.
Yeah, tackles go in the top five, but usually not guards or centers.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So you might as well just say we definitely would if we don't take the center, and I don't think we're going to take the running back Barkley because there is others there. You know, even though he's amazing, you know what I mean. He's worth it,
Joe.
No,
more.
I don't want to go there, but I'm just saying I'd rather take the guard to have him blocking. You know, makes sense for me. A stand up number one guard blocking there. With an average or above average running back that you might just get as much production there running the ball as having a top line running back with a sub or an average guard. See
Joe,
what I'm
Joe.
Saying there?
Appreciate Joe, the call, buddy.
John and I just talked the other day about this because he apprised me that there was a guy I was going to love at the Senior Bowl, Will Hog Molly Hernandez. If he is there at pick number 2 in the second round, which is number 34 overall, John, you will have to strap me down to the ground because I will jump so high, I will put a hole in the roof.
And, you know, in fact, Paul, and this is the funny thing when I'm looking at this now, there are probably 3 interior offensive linemen that I would be thrilled with the Giants getting with their first pick in the second round. And I'll even throw McGlinchey from Notre Dame the tackle in there, too, because I think there's a chance he might be there with the second pick in the second round.
I think that's asking a lot.
I've seen him in the 20s in most of these mock drafts. So maybe. Who knows?
Well, he's got to get to 34.
At least he's in the neighborhood, okay?
Okay.
He's in the neighborhood. I'll throw him in there. It's unlikely, I agree, but okay. I'll throw him into the mix. If he's there, if Will Hernandez is there, if Billy Price is there from Ohio State.
Yeah, you mentioned it.
Or if Isaiah Wynn is there from Georgia.
Yeah.
Those are the 4 offensive linemen, as of right now, and again, we have a lot of time, things can change.
A lot.
That I would be more than thrilled to get with that second overall pick in the second round. Now, if you get Quentin Nelson and you trade down with that first pick, are you going to pick a guard again in round 2?
Probably not.
I would say probably not. In that case, then I would say, you know what? Who's the best running back left on the board? Because as Joe said, and the more I've kind of thought about it over the weekend, I'm not sure how big of a drop-off there is from Barkley, who's excellent, down to that next group of running backs.
Mm-hmm.
The Darius Geises, the Rashad Jones.
Well, your
from
guest will tell us
USC,
about that when we talk to him.
And we'll talk to John about that. I think you can get... He won't be as good as Barkley. Don't get me wrong. He's not as good as Barkley. He's a level or maybe even 2 tiers down. But you can get a really good running back with either that 34th pick in the draft or with the 66th pick in the draft, I guess it would be. You could get a really good running back with either one of those 2 picks if you want to select one in this draft. And he can come in and start right away and impact your team in a positive way.
See, for me, John, if you believe also, by the way, that the Giants are going to get a 4th-round compensatory, which is what a lot of the experts seem to believe after the Jonathan Hankins free agency, that the Giants will get an extra 4th-rounder. That seems to be the consensus.
Yeah, because they didn't really add anybody in free agency to counteract that. So I think there's a decent shot at that.
So if they're going to have 5 picks in the first 4 rounds, 2 of them better be offensive linemen. And I got no problem with 2 of them being in the first 3 rounds.
I have no problem with
in
that
fact,
either.
Quite frankly, if you want to say to me...
And by the way, especially if you end up trading down and getting extra picks from your first pick,
yes,
then it has to be.
Yes.
I agree.
Absolutely.
I'm with you.
I mean, there's even a chance. I mean, if McGlinchey's down there at 34, I'd consider him there. But Zeus might not be a first rounder. There's a possibility.
Yeah, you know what? That's a chance, too.
You know, Zeus Jr.'s there at 34. I'd be looking at him, too.
I've seen him all over the place in
these drafts.
I've seen him as high as 12. But I've seen him not even be in the first round.
I've seen him in the second round.
Do you know why? I think he's one of these guys that's big and physical and has all the tools, but I think his technique's still a little bit raw. And I think that's what teams are trying to figure out.
Well, a lot of time to do that.
Well, but you can't really go, what is he, 6'8", 350? Is that
he's
what he is?
He's a horse. That's why they call him Zeus.
He's a big, boy. Let's go to Bob in Pennsylvania. He's up next. Hi, Bob.
How you doing, guys? I usually call into the show when something gets me upset or
yeah.
I have to vent. I've been very happy with what's been going on. I feel like everything's in good hands with Gettleman, Shermer, and Eli's going to be back. I've been very content, but, John, you got me pretty upset today.
How so?
Uh-oh.
You got me. I just can't believe. I'm thinking we might have to get a replacement in there for you.
Well, why is that? What did I say?
What'd you do? You're going to root for the Eagles.
I didn't say I was going to root for the
Eagles.
I said I didn't know who I was going to end up rooting for.
Oh, my God. Have you ever been to an Eagle? Did you ever go to the vet? Did you ever?
No.
I went to the Link the last time in 2006. That's it. I wasn't even concentrating on the game. I had to be moved. I brought a woman with me, and we had to be moved to safer seats.
Now, Bob, I'll be honest. Bob, I'll be honest with you. Bob,
These people are scum. Generally speaking, I mean, we have bad Giant fans too. But how could you possibly let that team say that they're world champions? What are you, crazy?
Bob, here's the thing. And I'll be honest with you. I've never attended a game in Philadelphia as a fan.
Well,
so,
I want you to put on a giant jersey and sit there.
No chance. There's no chance that's happening. And, Bob, honestly, if you're a Giant fan and that's how you feel, I am not going to have an argument with you whatsoever. But
I've never experienced.
He's just hot. Bob, hold on a second. Hold on a second now. Let John go.
No,
go
bring
ahead,
him up. That's what I did. Bring
something
him up.
Here with the Patriots that you'll never see duplicated. I admire them. Nobody's ever lost to them. They haven't lost to anybody but us in Super Bowls. I always loved Belichick as our defensive coordinator. And I just want to say to all Eagle fans, go there, enjoy your winter trip to Minnesota, because I was at Super Bowl 35. I've been at all Super Bowls. I've been actually lucky 4 out of 5. But there's nothing worse after you've spent all the money. And plus, to go to Minnesota, it'll be like, I'd love to
see
that trip back for all those people. So just rethink that, John.
Okay.
All right, Bob.
I understand.
You
too, Bob. Thanks for the call, buddy. I appreciate it.
Do you have a rebuttal for this?
No, look. I totally understand where he's coming from. I do. And their fans are rough. I'm not going to argue that. They're really rough. And if you've had a bad experience and that bothers you and you got to deal with them all the time, trust me, I get it. I totally understand. Here's the problem. And I'll be honest, folks. Growing up, I didn't know any obnoxious Eagle fans. I didn't growing up. I didn't. I grew up in Brooklyn. I wasn't in Jersey. I know in Southern Jersey and Pennsylvania, there's a lot of really tough Eagles fans.
Yeah.
And if you're around those folks and they bother you, I get it. I actually grew up and became an adult around more Patriot fans than I did Eagles fans probably.
Okay.
And Patriot fans that got very obnoxious in the early 2000s. Two of my best friends in college were from Boston and Rhode Island.
Okay.
So what does that tell you?
The man's got a frame of reference.
And that's where I'm coming from. And one of my good friends, actually, who I met at the end of my collegiate years, is actually an Eagles fan, and they're very reasonable. And they actually are very nice and polite, and they're good about it.
So you can't beat on him?
No. I can't. Her, actually.
Okay.
But and that's the thing. I think I haven't had that personal negative experience with some Eagle fans that the large majority of Giant fans have had. Now, obviously, they drive you nuts. And quite frankly, I'm going to be honest. If DeSean Jackson was on the Eagles, I couldn't root for them.
Right. I get it. Or
T.O. No.
Right.
I can't stand those guys. Or you want to go back to, you know, Jerome Brown and Evans and Reggie White and those Buddy Ryan Eagles teams? Oh, I hated those teams.
Andre Waters?
Oh, hated
Ryan
them.
Ryan Dawkins?
Hated them.
Okay.
Hated them. But this, I don't know, there's nothing about this Eagles team that gets me going. There's just not.
I give you two very quick, and I mean very quick, nuggets about going to Eagles games at the old Vet, okay, which was just a pit.
And that's honestly one of my regrets in life is never having seen an Eagles game at the Vet.
No.
Oh, you want to just see what it's like.
No. First of all, Eagles fans used to throw ice cream cups and broken pieces of jumbo pretzels at the Giants broadcast crew when they would go into the stadium at the old Vet.
Are you sure they just weren't throwing them at you?
No, who knows? So that was first. It was a hazard. Number two at the old vet, the radio broadcast booth smelled vigorously of miserable, old, greasy, fried chicken. And when you went into that radio booth, and Bob Papa will attest to this, I'm sure he will remember it well because his sinuses are probably still getting sick from it. You would go into that radio booth and the reeking smell of old stale grease from fried chicken just made you want to, it was just not a good place.
All right, we'll take one more quick call, Dave, and one then you get John up on the line. Let's get to Jason. I'm guessing this is South Jersey. Jason, you're up next on Giants.com. How are you?
Hi, how you doing, John?
Doing great, Jason. What's up?
Love your show, guys.
Thank you.
Paul, John, I've been listening for 2 years.
Appreciate
it. Great show. Love these guys.
Thank you.
Cool.
I'm right here in the middle of South Jersey. You know, like,
I'm going to get killed again.
Right across the bridge from – I remember the vet days, guys. And I'll tell you what, being a Giants fan up there in the nosebleed section, 700 level, ain't nothing like it, man.
God bless and Godspeed.
That cold steel and concrete was not a fun building to be in, right?
No, it was not.
No, it was not. I did not enjoy being
Hell,
there.
They had a judge in a jail in the building, for goodness sakes.
They did. They did.
Yes, they did. I want to talk about the draft, too.
Sure, go ahead.
The Hernandez kid in the second round, oh, man. We got a man crush on that guy. I hope we get him.
Yep.
And a lot of people keep picking Barkley, and they're picking, you know, quarterbacks, which is understandable and everything. But that Chubb kid, the defensive end, we had him with JPP and Vernon, man.
Yeah, look, I will never say no to another pass rusher.
Sure.
You know that. He's great. I don't think he's on the level as the kid the Browns took number one last year, though. But I do think he is clear-cut the best pass rusher in the draft.
Yes.
Yes, definitely. I think that would be an excellent option, especially if you can move back and get them just a couple spots.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though. You better not move past the Colts because I don't think he's getting past them.
Probably not.
That's what I was saying. A spot, maybe.
Yeah, in other words, I don't think you are. I think if you want him, you pick him at two.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want a defensive end, you could maybe go a couple rounds later and get Davenport. He might be there in the second.
Dude.
They keep saying they're squeezing him up into the middle of the
coming up that high now?
Way too high, in my opinion.
So he had a great week at the Senior Bowl. Lovely.
Yes.
And you know what? I didn't even think his week was that great, but he actually played really well in the game.
You know,
he played really well in the game.
All these things are going to
happen.
Thanks
for the call, man. We appreciate it. We got to run.
All these things are going to happen because of the workouts and then the combine and the pro days.
And Davenport's going to be even better at the combine.
Yeah,
he's got all the traits.
Great athlete.
And even though he doesn't have a pass rush move to his name out of a 3-point stand, somebody thinks they're going to be able to teach it to him.
I have a way we can guarantee that Hernandez is there in the second round. We could just, like, give him some bad fish or something.
Oh,
so at his pro day, he just, like, totally does awful.
I can only imagine how much he's going to bench press at the combine. But let's talk about that. That's another draft process. We're joined by our good buddy John Ledyard. He's from NDT Scouting. He's been with us the last few years talking about the draft. I saw John out there at the Senior Bowl. I know he took the time to watch some of the coaches' tape from the Senior Bowl practices as well. I thought who better to give us his insight on what he saw there. John, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino. How you doing today?
Hi, John.
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. I'll start with the offensive line first. And to me, the guys that stood out at the Senior Bowl to me, John, were the interior offensive linemen, specifically Isaiah Wynn and Will Hernandez. I thought those were by far the two best guys there at the guard spot. Your thoughts on those guys, how much do you think they helped their draft stock? Where do you think they'll land? And if there's anyone else on the offensive line that jumped out to you?
Yeah, both those guys had great weeks, and Isaiah Wynn was doing it with a torn labrum, we found out later. So, impressive stuff by him.
Wow.
I think both those guys have a shot to go somewhere from 20 to 45, 50. I mean, it is a little bit tough to tell an interior offensive line because some teams value them more than others. And
John, before you –
they weren't being valued that highly.
Before you go anywhere else, torn labrum, we're talking obviously surgery. Is he available for camp?
I think Campbell, you know, I don't know. You'd have to ask him, honestly, to whoever said what. We'll have to get a clear idea probably at the combine. That's what we'll know for sure. I don't want to, you know, speculate too much, but it's, you know, it could be partial, could be total. I don't know that there was any details out there last I saw, but at least he was working with some type of damaged labrum when he was there. And I don't know if he didn't know it or just worked through it or what exactly the extent was, but
tough
you
kid.
Remember Tack McKinley didn't play in the Senior Bowl last year because he had a torn labrum, and he had played with it the whole season. So it is something you can play with. I think Shaq Lawson had done that too in the past. You can play with it, but it, obviously long-term, you know, you're going to want to fix it up and you'll see if it holds up that way. So I think if I had to guess, yes, he'd be ready for camp. Based on other guys who've had that surgery, I think Tack McKinley was ready for camp. He had it around – he had it actually after the combine. This was later. So I think that, you know, that you're looking at a situation here where Isaiah Wynn probably if he's getting – I think he's getting it done right away. Now I can't remember for sure. But I think he'd probably be ready for camp. And hopefully there wouldn't be any long-term concerns. Everybody's different. You know, some guys have longer-term shoulder injuries than others. So hopefully he'd be available. But he had a great week. Will Hernandez is awesome. And what's amazing about Hernandez is 340 pounds, and he's like a dancing bear in pass protection. I mean, it's unbelievable his ability to – redirect and just so laterally agile for a guy his size, and in the run game, obviously, what he gives you is significant. And so both those guys were great. Actually, I thought Colby Gassett from Appalachian State did a great job as well. He's a zone scheme guy, so he's going to be a little bit more of a specific scheme fit than the other guys maybe. But I think he did a great job on tape, and I thought he had a really good week there too. There's some issues in pass protection. He's probably a day two guy, but I like his skill set. I think length, athleticism, I think you're going to see him test really well at the combine. I think he's got a lot of traits teams love, and he's nasty, too. So there was a bunch of guys. It was a good group. I think Austin Corbett could be a good center. It was a good – I was surprised to find how good the interior offensive line group was.
John, I know you and John were both at the Senior Bowl practices all week. I watched the game very intently. I thought one of the more interesting stories, and he's not going to be able to help because of his military commitment, was the Army right tackle, Toth, who, to me – look like he can be a good finesse technique-oriented tackle. I'm not so sure he's going to be a right tackle because you usually need more of a road grader over there. He's a little light in the behind. He seems like he might be a projected athletic left tackle. What did you see from him?
Yeah, he had an interesting week. I think he did some good things in the run game. He certainly looks like he could learn things in pass protection. The problem is, you know, at Army, they only – I think he passed that – I read the number. I want to say it was 48 times last
year.
So I
think it is. It is, John. It is Army career. I think it was 65 or something like that. It was crazy.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, okay. It was something close to that.
It was like hardly ever. So yeah, that's going to be a steep learning curve because the NFL is a passing league, and he's not a guy I think that would be ready to start right away for sure.
No, for sure.
And, you know, his Army commitment really muddies. You know, I don't. Will he get drafted with that? I just, you know, I don't really have any idea. You know, it'll be interesting to see. So, but I think, yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know. From hearing about him and his family, he's going to check a lot of the boxes for teams in terms of intangibles, obviously. You know, we've seen other guys, athletes, kind of make that transition before. Jason Peters, years ago, was a tight end in college that was used mostly as a blocker and more in the run game than anything else. And Villanueva from Army, you know, switching from wide receiver. So we've seen some guys make those kind of transitions over the years, and he's already kind of there body-wise, and he's played the position, and now he just has to kind of learn pass protection, because you could see his set points were all over the place and, you know, getting his hands and his feet synced up. But that was to be expected. I thought, all things considered, he wasn't the worst tackle there. I mean, he was better than Joe Nokum, the kid from TCU. And at times, and certain days, he looked better than Pitts, Brian O'Neill, who a lot of people were mocking in the first round. I'm not sure why. But I think he looked better than those guys for a lot of the days.
Joined by John Ledyard, NDT Scouting. John, I want to switch gears real quick to the big pass rusher that was there this week. And Marcus Davenport got a lot of attention. When I was watching practice, he did a lot of bull rush stuff out of the three-point stands. I thought he was better standing up. Then he made some plays in the game. I mean, some people have him in the top 10 now of their drafts, which to me seems bonkos given his lack of production at the skill level he played at. What's your take on Davenport?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a mystery to me as well. You know, we do this every year, though. We fall in love with these big, long, athletic guys. Remember Tano Passanio last year? He wasn't quite to the extent Davenport is.
The Villanova. Because,
but he ended up being like a late second-round pick to Kansas City and did hardly play it at all. Like, played like the last couple games of the season, I think, but hardly even saw the field his first year. Now, he could eventually be a good player, but again, if you're taking a guy round one, you better be an impact guy right away. And I don't know, man. I mean, Davenport had a rough week. He really has a hard time dropping his pad level coming around the corner, I think, is a big concern for him. Because if you can't corner as a pass rusher, if you can't win the edge, you've got to be able to drop your pads and bull rush people with regularity, almost Cam Jordan-like regularity to be effective. You know, if you're going to be a first-round pick, and Jordan Davenport just has a hard time dropping his pad level and getting under punches. He comes in high to the point of contact. Now, he got lucky in the game. There was, you know, he was facing Brian O'Neill, who doesn't know how to use his hands yet, and a couple other guys like that. He's given up a lot of surface area as a pass rusher, and nobody's really catching him and stopping him because these guys weren't great at using their hands. So I think the NFL is going to be a rude awakening for him. You know, the game threw things off a little bit because, you know, most of the time you're knowing the snap count in the games like that. They're not mixing things up. There's
right.
no dummy snap counts. There's no things like that. So you could kind of tee off a little bit. And you're right, he was better from a two-point stance. But even on tape, there's times where he falls steps at a two-point stance. So if you're get off inconsistently, you can't win the edge consistently because your pad level's too high. You know, I just think you're going to have issues early on. And if you can't deal with the right coaching, you know, and master the things, and some of that's flexibility. You know, I think he will run pretty well for his size. You know, 6'5", 259, I think was what he weighed at. I think he'll run well for that size, but I don't know that he'll be great in the agilities. That'll be the things to watch because there's been a lot of studies done that three cones and short shuttles translate really heavily to pass rushers. So I think that'll be the exercise to watch for Davenport.
John, all I had to look at was the TV tape. I know you got a good chance to look at some of the coaches' tape and stuff while you were on site. To me, Darius Leonard of South Carolina State was by far the best linebacker in the game. Now, I concentrated on offensive line and linebackers because, for me, I know the Giants desperately need to fortify those two positions. What did you see on coach's tape from him, and was there another linebacker you thought was even close to his performance?
Yeah, on his coach's tape, I thought he had a pretty good week. It was weird because I didn't really notice him during the practices for whatever reason. He just didn't stand out to me, and that happens every year. There's 115 guys. It's impossible to watch them all. You know, so you always go through three practices, and you feel like you got a good grasp of a good number of guys, but there's always about 10 to 12 that you just feel like you missed, and he was one of those guys for me this year. So watching him on the tape, I thought he did some really good things. He can clearly run. He's 6'2", 230. He looks like he could put more weight on, to be honest, if you needed him to bulk up. But when I saw on tape, I thought he's not quite as reactive in terms of trusting his keys and firing downhill yet as he can be, but that's expected. You know, I think that he would even get better over the course of games doing that from the first quarter to the fourth quarter. So I think he's still a little bit of a work in progress, but I think he'll test pretty well, and I think he'll definitely intrigue teams. But to me, honestly, the linebacker that stood out all week was BYU's Fred Warner. I thought this kid was unbelievable. I think he can run. He's 6'3 and a half, 235 pounds. I wasn't sure what to expect from him because he played kind of like an off-the-ball, 3-4 outside linebacker, but usually stepped out over the slot at BYU. So he's kind of just a cover guy, and he had 7 picks. He's super rangy. I think he's going to test like a defensive back, but he's 6'3", 235, and he read his keys. He flew downhill. I mean, he saw his guard pull on counter, and he chased him through the backside A-gap. I mean, rangy type of stuff that you just don't see from a lot of high quality, you know, a lot of linebacker prospects. I think Warner's going to test great. I think he's going to fly up board. I think he and Leonard both are probably going to be day two picks when it's all said and done.
John, that's important because Beecher, the Giants' new defensive coordinator, likes to do a lot of different morphing things with his back seven. And so athletic linebackers who can cover like that are huge.
Well, just look how he used Deion Buchanan in his time there. He was
exactly.
a converted safety to a linebacker. So those type of hybrid players, you're right, could be very useful. I want to talk about the running backs for a second real quick. We're joined by John Ledyard, MDT Scouting. Paul's going to ask you about Saquon Barkley in a second. I want to talk about that next group of guys. Do you think Rashad Penny is in that next group of guys, or is he another tier level down based on the depth of this running back class?
He's pretty good. You know, the one concern I have about Penny, I wish he just ran more like a big back. And it's a similar concern to me with Kalen Ballage. I wish they just ran like more big backs. You know, I think that's the thing when you watch them. But they are big. They just don't run like – they don't run people over. You know, they don't do things like that. And a lot of times they're brought down too easily by first contact. But Penny I like more than Ballage as a runner because his vision is he's very, very good. And even in gap schemes, you can find – soft spots and backside spots where there's a little void there and get through them. So he does some really nice things. I think that what he had to prove this week was that he could stand out in pass protection where he was hit or miss on tape and as a receiver where he was also – there just wasn't a lot of use for him. I thought he looked okay on tape in that role. So I think he was okay as a receiver, and in the game he had the long passing run. That was impressive for him. In pass protection, I still think there's going to be some concerns. There were no blitzes in the game, so you didn't really get to see him in that regard. But I think those will be areas he needs to work. I don't think he's a finished product, But I do think that if you're looking at that second-year back and you're looking at a day-two guy that can potentially be a workhorse for you, I think he's a guy that can max. He makes the most of his carries, I would say, on a regular basis. So I like that about him.
How about the Wadley kid from Iowa? Do you think he's going to max out as a third-down scat back? Does he just not have the size to be a guy that's going to be able to carry it 15 times a game?
Yeah, he doesn't have the size, and honestly, I'm not sure he has the mindset either to carry between the tackles a whole lot. You know, pass protection could be an issue with him, too. I thought it was an issue, you know, a good bit of times on tape, and then even there, he didn't stand out in that regard.
Nope.
I mean, you're talking about a pretty small guy, 190 pounds. You know, there's just not a lot to Wadley. And he does have potentially a third-down receiving back type of role, but you know, I think he's going to be a mid- to late day three pitch somewhere in that range unless he really runs fast and surprises people. Because if he's – you have to be real – if you're that size, you have to be a blazer, you know, to see the ball.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure he's that. And I don't think he's elusive, you know, special elusive like Tariq Cohen or Darren Sproles or someone like that. So he kind of is too much of a tweener in like every regard, really, I think, to be a big factor in the NFL.
Now, John, we know that you've written some stuff about Saquon Barkley, who's a very big hot spot for a lot of people talking about the top picks of this draft. The thing that one of our callers has a guy on the Penn State staff. He called up our show yesterday, and, you know, despite maybe some of the flaws that he might have in terms of reading the holes right or going in the right spots and maybe hesitating, et cetera, he was saying that he thinks Barkley deserves even more credit than most people give him for, because the person that he has on the Penn State staff tells him their offensive line is suspect at best, and that he makes more somethings out of nothing than any recent running back that he could remember. And so he was trying to spin it that don't be down on this guy for what you see him maybe running into. Praise him for the stuff that he creates on his own. So I need to ask you about that, because clearly this guy's going to be a very, very much talked about pick.
Yeah, he will be. And I think there's some level of truth to that, you know, but with any back, when you get into bad habits, sometimes they're hard to let go of, even when your blocking does improve. And there's enough times on tape where Barkley has good blocking and still he'll either turn his back to line of scrimmage or just doesn't bang his side where he should, because he's always looking to bounce. Mm-hmm. And improvise, that it concerns me some, especially from back his size. You know, I mean, stylistically, I've compared him to Reggie Bush, but he's way bigger than Bush.
Sure.
So, you know, Reggie Bush wouldn't run between the tackles. He tried to bounce everything because that was really the only way he could win. Barkley can win between the tackles, you know, if he just commits himself to it. When he does, those are some of his best runs. But it's just so inconsistent from game to game. Now, he's an unbelievable athlete. He's an unbelievable receiver. He's an unbelievable return man. You know, he has the talent to be an unbelievable running back. I mean, he can still make splash plays happen. So, you know, obviously he deserves to go in the first round. You know, I think that's without question. But where I get into concerns with Barkley is if this is going to be a guy that you ask to carry your offense like a Le'Veon Bell or like an Ezekiel Elliott, I don't think he's on those guys' level as a runner with his vision and decisiveness. And you know, to me, vision and really decisiveness, they kind of go hand in hand. And I think those are really the most important things for running back. If you don't have those, you know, you can be a great everything else, but as a pure runner, you know, it really limits you and holds you back. So I don't think those are, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, like a 0 or a 1 for Barkley. I just don't think they're as close to a 9 or a 10 as they are for guys like Bell or Elliott. You know, he still has great examples of those, but it's just inconsistent, which is something to be concerned about and coach up at the next level, but certainly not enough to scare you off of taking a talent like that, you know, completely in the first round or something like that.
John, I want to throw out a name to you, and I don't know how far back you go because we don't know each other as well as you and John do. Tyrone Wheatley.
Yeah.
What do you think?
As comparing him to Barkley?
Yeah.
Wheatley played when I was younger, but I remember
okay.
him, so I'm not that.
Okay.
I'm not that old. Yeah, but I remember.
Wheatley.
Yeah, he played when I was younger, and I feel like there might be some similarities. I'd have to look how Wheatley tested and things like that at that time. But, I mean, both of them are bigger backs, you know, certainly. And, you know, Barkley and Wheatley had kind of that reputation too, maybe, of not always running as big as he maybe his
exactly.
frame was. Not being like a power back, you know, per se. So I think that some of those things could be true about them. Barkley might be the way better athlete, though, and the way better way better all-around threat to fit the modern NFL, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Wheatley turned out to be a bust, but you heard a lot of the criticisms about him, not running as big as he should have, not running with the power he should have, not breaking as many tackles as he should have, running into traffic when he was missing holes. You heard a lot of those same things, and he wasn't quite the athlete Barkley is. Barkley more spectacular, more of a big play
and
guy.
Better receiver, obviously.
Better receiver, yeah. Although Wheatley wasn't bad at that either, especially after he got off the Giants. Wheatley was a bit of a head case, too, which why he turned into a bust.
John, yeah. I got a question for you, John. If you don't go Barkley in that, you know, first top five area, if you're one of those teams, how much of a downgrade are you getting if you decide instead to pick a running back at the top of the second round or even waiting until the top of the third round? How deep does this class go, and how big of a difference is there between, say, the Jones kid from USC or the Geis kid from LSU as compared to Barkley?
To be honest, I probably, as a pure running back, will rate Geis higher. Now, I'll have the disclaimer, he won't give your offense as much flexibility, although he's a good receiver for sure. He won't give your offense as much flexibility as Barkley. But at the same time, you know, he may not be able to split out wide and run nine routes and, you know, seam routes down the field, you know, and things like that. He didn't do that at LSU, but he's going to be a capable receiver. He's a great pass protector. He's better than Barkley as a pass protector. I don't know if you'll find many people that argue with you on that. You know, he's a great pass protector on tape, and he loves it. He loves the physicality of the game. If you watch Geis' tape against Alabama, you'll never question his toughness ever again in his career. I mean, there was nothing there the entire game. People talk about Barkley's offensive line, and it's fair, but Geis' offensive line, horrendous. I mean, that was the worst group LSU's had in years, especially in terms of run blocking. They didn't move anything. And so he really had to maximize every carry. But unlike Barkley, Geis didn't really try and improvise as much because, especially against the technically sound SEC defenses, I mean, you're not going to get anywhere, you know. So what he did was just bang it in there and carry his tacklers as far as he could. And the year before, when LSU's offensive line was a lot better and they had a couple guys go to the NFL draft last year, you know, when that happened, he had more space to run, and you could see it in the open field, the elusiveness, the speed. You know, I've been told right now he's running at between 218 and 222 pounds. He's running in the high 4.4s, the low 4.4s, I'm sorry, like 4.41, 4.42, 4.43. He runs that. There's going to be a lot of people talking about him. Two other guys to watch, Ronald Jones and Sony Michel from Georgia, to me, is a first-round type of talent. I don't think he's getting enough talk, and I think after the combine, you'll see his name bump up on everybody's board.
Well, it was really good at the bowl game. Let's not kid ourselves. In the championship game.
Tremendous.
Well, and in the playoffs.
Against the best defense in the country.
Yeah, no question. Hey, look, I know we're running out of time here, so if we don't ask you about the quarterbacks who were down there at the Senior Bowl, a lot of our callers are going to have a mutiny with us here because there's so many of them want the Giants to take a QB number two. So, John, let's just ask you about Allen and Mayfield, the two superstars who were down there as opposed to the other guys, even though they had good games. What are your thoughts coming out? Did they help themselves or hurt themselves in your mind? I thought Allen helped himself, in my opinion.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think so. But I think both did. Yeah, I do. And Allen started off rough. And there's inconsistencies. There always is. But really, with a guy like that, people just want to see, is he still going to make the wild throws? And he still did. That's the bottom line. He made the wild throws in practice. He made the wild throws in the game. So, you know, that was – people are going to forget the other stuff. You know, and the other stuff's real. And you know, do I think Allen's as good as Mayfield or Rosen or Darnold? Or, I don't. I don't think he's as good as those guys. But I think his potential's through the roof. And at quarterback, that can be scary because a lot of potential guys never reach it and never come close. You know, you come from Wyoming, you have bad production, you play bad teams. You know, for the most part, when you play better competition, Power 5, I mean, that was his worst performances. He was really, really bad in those games. And I think his supporting cast was better than advertised. So do I want to see Allen in the NFL offense? Yes. Do I think he should be in the number one overall pick? No. And this is where I gotta watch myself because the last couple of years when you guys have had me on, like right, I think the day of the draft, I said Wayne Goldman, I said B.J. Goodson, I said Avery Moss.
He did.
I ended up picking all
he
three
did.
Of them. So
yeah.
I didn't give you any quarterback predictions just yet, but if I had to guess, I think Rosen might be your guy. But don't hold me to that. I got a couple more months to lock it in.
Look, John, if you're going to pick a quarterback for the Giants, I don't want you on any show that I'm doing.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. John,
case closed.
John is great. John, every year, is always on with Paul and I on our Saturday show.
Yes.
And he always gives us a couple dark horse guys. And he did nail all three of those guys he mentioned. You know, John, John, we got to close the show, but I got to ask you real quick. If you're picking at number two, which, if any of these quarterbacks, not even throwing need out of the way here for the Giants, skill level and potential, Which one, if any of these quarterbacks, do you think are worthy of the number two pick in the draft compared to the other talent that would be on the table?
I think Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield both are, to be honest. And I think Rosen, he doesn't have Luck's arm, and he isn't an athlete like Luck. But other than that, you know, he still has a very good arm, and he's still a fine athlete. He's not a statue by any stretch of the imagination. I think other than that, he's very comparable to Luck. I think he's a very, very good football player. Now, people are going to talk about the other stuff, and I'm not going to comment on that because everything I know about Rosen, that's a guy that I'd want to coach, I'd want to play with. So I like him a lot, and I think Baker Mayfield, he doesn't have quite the same downfield talent that Rosen has. Rosen's deep ball, really came along. His arm came back over the second half of the year. His deep ball really came along and was really great throughout the second half of the season. But I don't know if Baker has the same consistency in terms of finding his range deep, but he'll put it in the spot where his receivers can make a play. If you give him some guys that can go up and get the ball, I think he can be dangerous to all levels of the field, and I think he has all the right stuff in terms of leadership. I mean, the guys that I asked from Oklahoma and even the guys that were there just playing with him this week at the Senior Bowl, Obani Okoronkwo told me when he and Mayfield were captains together, and he said when Mayfield would speak, just before games or anything, he just constantly got chills. I mean, he said he's never been around a leader like that. So I think that's going to appeal to coaches. It's going to appeal to teammates. And I think both those guys are high-quality quarterbacks. I like the rest, too, but I think those are the top two guys.
John, I got to be honest. I'm surprised you didn't throw Darnold in there because I watched probably around 7 of his games last year, and I think arm talent-wise, he's just as good as the other guys. He made some anticipatory throws into small spaces that I thought were pro-level. Yeah. I agree that his motion is a little bit sloppy, and he's not as polished as a thrower of Rosen, but I think his additional mobility, and I think he does move a lot better than Rosen does, I think that makes him very intriguing number two. Maybe not a day one starter, but if you can wait a year, I think he might have a bigger upside than any of these guys.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that there is that with Darnold. There's the risk factor with Darnold. His arm, I think it is very good. I think Rosen's arm is comparable. When his arm came back, Rosen, remember he had the shoulder things, and
he
started the year and it didn't look right. But I think when he came back, I think it started to be closer to similar. But Darnold is a very good talent. There's no question. I think he's a redshirt sophomore too. He's going to be young. There's a lot of growth still to be had there. I would be very interested in Sam Darnold still. And if I might have a second round grade on Darnold in a vacuum, but for a team, I know a quarterback's going to be higher value. You bump him up the board. You pick him, somewhere in the top 10. I can get on board with it because I can understand, you understand that he's not a finished product, hopefully, and you give him a little while to work things out. Decision-making is a big concern because there were a lot of mistakes that kind of repeated themselves throughout the year. But
a lot of turnovers.
He's great talent, and he has all the intangibles, too.
Awesome. John, great stuff. We appreciate the time, my friend, and we'll certainly be a frequent chatting partner with you over the course of the next few months, all right?
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, John. John Ledyard, NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter. Go and find him. In fact, I should go and give you his Twitter handle if I'm good about this. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. We really appreciate you being with us. Tomorrow, Lance and Paul will be back, and then we'll have you the rest of the week as we continue to cover what happened at the Senior Bowl, draft prospects, free agencies coming, and, of course, maybe we'll have some type of final word at some point this week on the Giants coaching staff. So that's something that we're going to have to see across the week. Make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com and you stay tuned to everything else throughout the week. And John Ledyard, by the way, on Twitter is at Ledyard, LEDYARD, NFL Draft, at Ledyard, NFL Draft on Twitter. Everyone, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Have a great day.